Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it, Tuesday? It's been a long week already. It's a Tuesday edition of Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, producing, engineering. A lot to get to. Coach Diaco met with the media. You'll hear from Bobby D on that defense here in a little bit. Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com will join us to talk some college football. And then next hour, some local and national perspective from a local standpoint, keeping it in the Big Ten. It's Big Ten Buffet time with Rick Pizzo. We'll get caught up with Mr. Rick around 5:25. Greg Smith and I had a chance to catch up with Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports. Dennis has his anonymous coaches sequence with CBS that is out, and it's focused on cheating in college football. So some stories that Dennis was told on the condition of anonymity by some of the college football folks behind closed doors. So you'll hear that conversation in the 5 o'clock hour. Can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can tap the line. Brought to you by Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. Also on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio or at Hail Varsity. Can email us, Chris, at HailVarsity.com. You've got some whining going on today in the world of quarterbacks, and we'll spend some time with that, be it Josh Rosen, or if you're a former Alabama quarterback that is transferred. Not happy. So let this be a lesson. You've got to, I don't want to say coddle, but you got to treat quarterbacks a little or a lot differently. So I had a practice today, open practice on Thursday. Excited to see where Nebraska is at. Great story by Jacob Padilla and a nice write-up on today's practice by Jacob Padilla. Also Derek Peterson all over it. But it's a fair question here. Can the Huskers' second level, those black shirts, can the second level take the black shirts to another level? Let's discuss this for a little bit before we get into Diaco and some of his thoughts on the progression. What is Nebraska missing from its defense to go from adequate to good, from good to great? And if you're screaming at your radio right now or your app, it's personnel. Or actually performance with that personnel. They may have it. It may show up. It may be tapped because of this scheme change. But that is what you're missing. And I think of the just phenomenal Nebraska defenses. And it had two traits that made it very, very difficult to beat. Well, three. Okay, I'm gonna put a 15-list bullet point together when I talk about great defenses. It had speed off the edge. It was a fast, fast, fast defense. The best defenses Nebraska's had have been extremely fast. They have been tough. And if you get tough and fast together, that means you're probably beating a tackle or a guard off the edge on a run play. And for certain, you're getting after the quarterback. So does Nebraska have tough guys? Yes. Do they have fast guys? Time will tell off the edge because pass rush was an issue last year consistently, and it has been an issue since Randy and Malik and Vincent left. Not that Malik and Vincent were sack masters, but you had those guys were able to penetrate and at least collapse the pocket on the interior, or you had Randy when he was locked in off the edge to cause problems. Avery Moss, know his story, know he's in the NFL, know he had to leave, but he was a guy, as a young guy, that showed some promise off the edge. So can the second level take the black shirts to another level? Please read this story by Jacob Padilla. And it's interesting where Wisconsin's come. When you think of Wisconsin football, you think of J.J. Watt and that team. I think of Russell Wilson. But you can really think of those linebackers that really showed up post-Bielema. And it was Gary Anderson. He didn't like his time in Madison. He left for Oregon State. He was one and done. But he brought a 3-4 with him. Chris kept it. And you've got just some dudes that are perfect fits. And coming out of high school, they're really good athletes. They're tough players. But they're not the most highly recruited guys in the region. Or in the Midwest, for that matter. They're more fits than genetic freaks. So when we talk a little bit about the next level or what's going to make Nebraska a tremendous defense again, it'll rely on the linebackers. Have you got really good linebacker play at Nebraska recently? I think you've had pretty good linebacker play, but in the big games, you haven't. And those big games were the ones where the score was lopsided. Your linebackers had really bad days. And the last just superstar you've had at linebacker, you'll see on Hard Knocks tonight, is Lavonte David. And then you've had some hybrid dudes like Gomes or Haig, and I'm going back 100 years here, sort of, kind of. So can this unit, can this second-level unit be a catalyst for the defense? They're going to have to be because of how important the 3-4, those four in the 3-4 are. And I think Nebraska is still a work in progress with that cat spot at the linebacker. That's your hybrid Von Miller wannabe type. You'll hear from Diaco on the dog position. And that is what Gifford and Newby, it seems to me, are sharing. Tyron Ferguson's also been doing well. So one of your outside spots, you're good, and you've had rave reviews with your two inside guys in Dedrick Young and Chris Weber. Avery Roberts also doing well at the inside spot behind Dedrick Young. That's the word. So 3 out of 4 ain't bad, but you need 4 out of 4. And for Nebraska to be tremendous this year, they'll need to find that guy that can stand up and cover and come off the edge and get after the quarterback when asked to, but not be a liability in coverage and be the body type of what traditionally was a defensive end on one of the ends. Because you have a weak side backer right now, guys that are familiar with it because Newby and Gifford have played it. You have a middle linebacker right now in Weber because he's played it. Dedrick, you've had an outside linebacker. He's played it. You've got some overlap with Dedrick and Newby, with Newby and Gifford, but you'll get it figured out. It'll work out okay. You're missing that fourth spot, that cat spot. So can the linebackers help kind of win the day, carry the day for this defense to take a step forward? Corners will need to be good. Safeties will be good. But that is a monster question for me. And what number is good for you as a Nebraska fan from a sack total? Think of the years with Sue and Crick. I think Sue had 12 and a half. I think Crick probably had 10 and a half. I think as a group, they were probably well over 30, nearing 40. Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore going to be in on Thursday. His senior season defense with him and Carricker. And I think Dogunduro Ola was at one of the defensive tackle spots. I mean, those guys, I think, were, God, they were nearing 50 sacks as a team. I mean, that was a top 30 defense. I know it's cause we're talking about, but the Jays' senior year, they were a really good defense. And you had Stuart Bradley and Bo Rude also put up some sack numbers because they would blitz. So, I mean, you have some personnel to get funky and get after the quarterback. But it's going to need to come, honestly, from Carlos Davis. I think Kranak and I were talking a little bit about this on Saturday, too. What kind of sack numbers can you get from Carlos Davis at the defensive end spot? What does Freedom do for you at the other defensive spot? Because Freedom's coming in as probably your sack leader the last couple of years. 4.5 or 5 sacks, so he's nearing double-digit career sack numbers. And Freedom's been your pass rusher until he's kind of slowed down mid-season. He's been focused on, he's also at times dealt with some bumps and bruises. So you have Freedom, you have Carlos. What do you want from Mick? Casey Hampton, the longtime legendary nose guard for Pittsburgh, the former Texas player. I think I got to look this up. But Casey wasn't a sack guy, is my point. Casey ate real estate at the nose guard spot. It's a bonus if they sack a quarterback. Blindly running in as four guys are trying to tackle him in that A-gap. But I think if Nebraska's around 35 sacks this year, your defense will be in the top 20. Because they are getting pressure. They're getting pressure. They're getting home. And if they're getting that much pressure, there's probably several instances where they didn't get home as well. But you're still hurrying the quarterback, which will help your young corners and can make your veteran back one, maybe opportunistic defensively and get after the football. Then it comes to the middle part of that linebacking core, knowing where to go, how to blitz to get after it. And the thing that like makes me smile if I'm a Nebraska fan at the 3-4 is what it can become with its unpredictability and where the blitzes are coming. And forever, Texas A&M, when they had their Wrecking Crew defense, this is like my favorite blitz to run on Madden or college football. And you had the two inside linebackers kind of cross or stunt. You had your two outside linebackers pinch in and blitz. And then you had Polamalu fly at 100 miles per hour up the middle. So you sent six, and you'd kill the quarterback or get a turnover. At least that's how it worked in our game room basement. Or I'd just hit reset and we'd start over. You'd get burnt. Good practice report. Where is Nebraska at? Cut 13 here when it comes to sharing time. Usually share is a good thing to emphasize. Not if you're trying to win a spot as an outside linebacker in this defense. But Nebraska and their two guys on the outside, Newby and Gifford, are really coexisting well. That's a good thing. Nebraska's one of their best teams ever, 1999, had a loaded linebacking core. And Coach McBride could situationally use as many as five different rotations at linebacker. You had three on the field. There's five different guys that could be on the field at the same time, and they were beautiful. They were great. And that's kind of where Nebraska's at now with Gifford and Newby. Here is Luke Gifford on him and Newby's relationship and how that position's going.
We work so well together, honestly. We watch film together. We bounce things off each other. If I don't know something, then he knows it. If he doesn't know something, then I know it, you know? So it's like, it's really nice being able to coach each other and work together, because dog's not an easy position, you know? We're out there in space. We got a lot of jobs to do. So we use each other as much as we can. At the end of the day, we're both going to help the team win. And when he's in there, there's no drop-off when I come in. And when I'm in there, there's no drop-off when he comes in. So it's nice to have that.
It is. It is. It's a luxury, frankly, because both guys are good in coverage. You have the body type that a lot of guys defensively love with Gifford. And then there's Newby, who has history as a good cover guy and also is probably a little more skilled in the pass rush department based on that's how he started his career. It's what Gifford's been working on. So it's been deemed this outside spot, this dog spot, a cooperative. Here is Coach Diaco.
very, very good. Both players are really doing a wonderful job. My only hesitation was I'm not sure that we're really seeing that as so much a battle as a cooperative performance between the two of them to put together the very best outside linebacker overhang position and production. So I think they're doing a beautiful job getting ready and cooperating. I don't feel a lot of angst and anxiety with the competition at that spot.
So bottom line is you're good at that spot with your two linebackers, and it's interchangeable, and I'm not going to name a guy a starter because they're both going to play starter reps. They're probably both going to get a black shirt if and when they're handed out. Not if, but when they're handed out. And that's not unheard of. And whatever, be honest, whatever makes the defense click, and Gifford and Newby get that. And these guys want to win. And they want it to go smoothly, and they know there'll be growing pains, but they want to make that jump defensively. And for the black shirts to really come back, you got to get that second level to help spearhead it. And a good write-up by Jacob Padilla. Great to be with you this Tuesday as we'll talk some more college football with Mitch Sherman of ESPN, Dennis Dodd of CBS, Rick Pizzo of the Big Ten Network, both next hour. But it's Mitch Sherman time up next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome.
More coming up from Bob Diaco. Great to be back with you on Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Chris Schmidt, thanks for your time. Dennis Dodd on the way, and Rick Pizzo will join us. We welcome in Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine, and Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how are you?
I'm well. I'm feeling refreshed and looking forward to all that is to come for the rest of this month and in football season. So it's here and ready to go.
Is it usually about the 7th or 8th day of August when Mitch Sherman kind of flips that switch?
Well, it could come earlier. I mean, you have to flip the switch a little bit in July because there's that barrage of media days. But, yeah, preferably if I've got my choice in the matter, and fortunately I did this year, I like to get one more dose of battery charging in before we get too heavy into August. So I was able to do that over the last few days, and now I'm just hitting the ground running. So, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about upcoming football season, which is more than I can say after the College World Series in late June.
No, I bet. And keeping with that, those good vibes, how do you think Nebraska fans are feeling about the season? What's the feedback and vibe you've had?
I would say it's, well, in some circles it's cautious, and then others I'd say there's like unbridled optimism, which is generally what you get every year. I think when August is here, your fan base separates into a few different camps of people, and there's the naturally optimistic people who have plenty of fodder in the media and listening to the raw comments made by coaches. I mean, now you don't even need the media anymore to hear what the coaches have to say. It's all right there for you. You can listen to the press conferences and the interviews as they happen and determine for yourself what you think. And, you know, I think it leads to a lot of optimism because coaches are generally optimistic people at this time of year. Players are optimistic at this time of year. And that can change depending on how the season goes as you get into September and October. But August is a time when everybody is singing a happy song. And I think for the most part, at least most of the Nebraska people that I've encountered, and I live among them, believe what they're hearing from these coaches. They believe that this 3-4 defense is going to click from day one. They believe that Tanner Lee is ready to come out and look like an NFL caliber quarterback in September. And, you know, we'll see. Time will tell on those issues and others.
Few minutes with Mitch Sherman on Hail Varsity Radio at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, what are some things you're looking for with Nebraska, specifically in the receiving core? And I know that lines of scrimmage is where you Well, you make your money. In the Big Ten, you win football games with the line of scrimmage. But I wanted to spend some time on the receiver part and specifically kind of zero in on DPE and Stanley Morgan Jr.
Yeah.
Both of those guys, do you think they can have breakout seasons or kind of that natural progression season? Stanley's kind of been the third guy behind some upperclassmen. Do you think he can explode this year? And then same with DPE. You've seen him as a freshman, and you know what he had as a return guy, and he had some moments catching the ball. Now it's senior year time, and he'll be a focal point on the offense as well. Can both those guys step forward this year, do you think?
Well, you know, I think you pretty much said it about Stanley Morgan, and I'll take it a step further and say that I feel like he has been, since the day that he stepped onto the Nebraska campus, the most talent-filled receiver on the team. And that's saying a lot with Jordan Westerkamp and Brandon Riley and Alonzo Moore and others whom he has played behind. But this is a guy with real NFL skills, and we've seen it in flashes. And I don't want to say that I don't think that he has been inconsistent. I think he's been consistent when the opportunities have been there for him. This hasn't had the number of opportunities, in part because of the offense that Nebraska's run with Tommy Armstrong in charge, and in part because there have been so many guys more experienced than him who were in line to get passes thrown to them before Stanley. But there were even times in his freshman and sophomore years where you saw Nebraska look to him in critical moments because they had that much belief that he was going to be able to go up and get the ball, whether it was a jump ball situation or just beating a defensive back. So, yeah, I think this is the year where he realizes that potential, where it's no longer maybe one game out of four or five that you see it in more than just a burst. I think he's going to be consistent. I think he can be the leader of this group. Whether that's through being vocal or just going out there and playing the way that everyone knows that he's capable of playing. I think can be one of the better receivers in the Big Ten. I think he can be a guy who puts himself on the radars of a lot of NFL teams this year. So I think he can be one of the best receivers Nebraska's had in a number of years. I think he has a chance to set some records, whether it's a single season or even make a run at some career marks if he stays healthy over the next 2 years. So that's saying a lot. I think really highly of him. For Demorne Pearsonell, it's just a matter of being healthy. You know, I think he's shown us in 3 years that he's a guy, and maybe this will change in his senior year, who isn't going to perform at the highest level when he's nicked up. He's had serious injuries along the way, don't get me wrong. But I think that it takes a little bit to get him back to full throttle. And when he's there, he's like a sports car, and you've got to have that engine finely tuned and the oil changed and the gas tank full and everything before you see the real DPE. And that's not necessarily a knock against him. I think it's just related to his size and the way that he plays and what he does in the punt return game and what he can do on the offense. It's not all going to look great. And it's not all gonna come out and give you everything you want unless he is in top form. So we'll see if he can get there and stay there.
What type of sports car? Are we talking Ferrari? Are we talking Vet? I mean, if Mitch is picking the sports car, what kind?
Yeah, I think he looked like a Vet at times in his freshman year. You know, I wouldn't say that he was like if he was an All-American, truly an All-American, and maybe took that freshman year status and translated it to what you would have thought this guy could have been like as a senior when you watched him 3 years ago. And then you're talking about him being like a Lamborghini or something, but he hasn't gotten there, you know. And unfortunately, too many times in his career, he's looked like a broken down Chevy. So we'll see if also a Vet. So we'll see if he can get back to that level.
Still a Vet, just need the tire changed.
Right.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Mitch, let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball, and let's take Chris Jones off the table because of his injury, and let's move Kalu out of there because he's experienced. Is there another guy on the defensive side of the ball you circle as to kind of being the barometer for this team this year?
Wow, the barometer of the defense. I like Reed and Williams both Williams, Aaron Williams and Kyron Williams in that secondary.
Okay.
You know, I think what, and I'm going to stick in the secondary because maybe that isn't the most natural thing to do in the Big Ten. But I like the, I love the experience that Nebraska has in the secondary with those guys I mentioned. And then also what they have coming back with Lamar Jackson being, I think, a real guy who has high-end potential. Yeah. So those guys stand out to me. I mean, definitely up front. When you switch to a 3-4, your defensive line has got to be filled with some pretty standout players, some difference makers. So, you know, we'll see what Nebraska ends up having there. I mean, if the Davis twins – emerge as I think everyone has expected them to from early in the even before they play they came to Nebraska. From the time that Nebraska got commitments from those two guys, I think there was always this vision that they were going to be these stalwarts in the middle of the front part of the Nebraska defense. So this is obviously the year where that's got to happen for Nebraska to get the kind of play up front that it needs and wants. So I would say the guys that I mentioned in the back, and then the Davis brothers up front. To me, that if you transport me all of a sudden to September 2nd, and I'm sitting in the press box watching Nebraska, or watching on TV, I'm probably watching those guys right away when the defense takes the field.
They are going to be big time playmakers for Nebraska. For Nebraska to have the success they want, Mitch Sherman's with us, ESPN.com and magazine. Mitch, last thought here. What's your reaction to Josh Rosen's comments about school and SAT requirements and, his discussion points that have gone national now?
You know, Josh Rosen, and I met him when he was still in high school, has always been kind of an interesting kid, a different kid, seems to be motivated in ways that aren't necessarily what you'd expect from a guy who was a five-star quarterback and now a guy who is a proven player and seemingly a future NFL quarterback. So I don't think anything that he says is necessarily representative of what you find from he's not like symbolic of today's college football player. I think he played tennis growing up. I think he just has a perspective that's a little bit different, and it translates somewhat in things that he has said recently. But he's also kind of a progressive guy and probably representative more of like the modern day student athlete who understands much better what college sports is about for him. You know, it's like it's not really like a me first kind of attitude that you find with today's the more progressive student athletes. But I think these kids, because of the way that college sports is, the directions that it's moving, these kids are a lot more aware of what they get and what they don't get in today's day and age of sports. And Rosen is one of the more outspoken guys in that area.
Mitch, about 20 seconds. What's coming up for you on ESPN.com?
Working on a piece this week about the grad transfer market in college football, what to expect from it this year, and really what coaches around the country think of where all of this is headed, whether it's good for the game, not so good for the game, and some surprising comments, at least in my reporting, and talking to coaches in the Big 12 and also around the country about the importance and changing role of the grad transfer in this game.
Good stuff. Mitch, we'll read it. Thanks for a few minutes. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Chris. Take care.
You too. Mitch Sherman with his ESPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. And love to get Mitch's thoughts there on Josh Rosen because I knew he spent time with him in high school. We'll spend some time with Bob Diaco. His thoughts post-practice. You heard a little bit about Gifford and Newby, what they're doing, the cooperative that exists, other impressions, specifically tackling, defensive line depth, and age on the staff. All addressed by Bobby D. Hail Varsity continues.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Mitch Sherman, Dennis Dodd, our conversation. Myself, Greg Smith, had a chance to talk with Dennis Dodd earlier today. Cheating in college football. Stories that'll make you go, well, there's a payroll to meet. Famous last words of SMU boosters. That is 25 minutes away. We'll get caught up with Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. Get caught up with Rick at Sauter Heyman. Rick Heyman, that is. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, Sauter Heyman. And pure-grown diamonds are 100% real diamonds, except they're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. You've heard me talk about pure-grown diamonds. Go take time and see for yourself just how beautiful they are. They're eco-friendly. They're sustainable. They're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. Maybe it's birthday or anniversary time for you and the missus, and it's time to treat her. And go see why pure-grown diamonds are some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. You can go see Rick and your friends, 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point, Pavilion Lincoln, or out west in Grand Island, SauterHeyman.com. Well, Bob Diaco, it was Diaco Tuesday, and the hair looked marvelous. It did. Was impressed by it. And his thoughts on the defense overall. What's his reaction? How are things going as you're into week two?
Good. Guys are good. Guys are working hard. Guys are trying hard. The unit's improving. The players are improving. Coaches are improving.
Okay. It's getting better. That's important. Now, how much better are guys now than last week? Well, probably better, but Coach Diaco was adamant that, listen, man, we won't know till it's game time.
They're going to need to play in the games. You only get markedly better when you play in the games. So really none of those guys have played in the games. So there's just a difference to game that can't be simulated at any other time. You know, we do the best job we can preparing at game speed and also maintaining safe drills and proper drills through the grind of a camp and a preseason camp. The entree is the season and the game's in the season. So, you know, the objective would be to get the players to the season, to participate in the season. And the preparation leading up to that, you want it to be as realistic as possible, but there's nothing like playing in the games. Players make the biggest gains when they get an opportunity to participate.
Okay, now it's time to talk appetizers, because if the entree is the season, we got to talk appetizers. And based on the scrimmage, the run game's going to be like some filthy, greasy, tasty gut bomb onion rings. You'll get that one or two perfect ring, and it'll be awesome. You'll dip it in whatever the hell they give you. I'm not a ketchup guy all the time. It'll be great. And then about midnight, it's 4-2-40 to the John, brother. Consistency is what I'm saying. And based on Riley's comments, The O-line and the first team offense need more consistency. So when we get to watch Thursday, we'll know more. Maybe they're moving forward. But I think the O-line, onion rings, they dig it. They get it. You're going to eat them. You're going to run it. How good are they? And does it hurt you later? That's my point. Later being third down. More on Nebraska here and Bob Diaco. Tackling, also mentioned, first time Coach Diaco's had a chance to talk since the scrimmage, the 86-play scrimmage on Saturday, and tackling an issue. Maybe we're making too much of it by saying it was an issue, but it was mentioned by Riley. It was mentioned by Riley, and there were some missed tackles. More about, in my opinion, guys seizing the opportunity than the actual missed tackle. But here's Bobby D on tackling 101.
Anytime you miss tackles, it's an issue. In every contest, there are missed tackles. So it's a threshold of missed tackles. When the tackle's missed, what happens after that? Is the guy immediately knocked down because of effort from other players and proper pursuit angles? So there's other elements. There's a lot of work done and that goes into tackling. Bad tackling defense has no chance to be productive defense.
He's right. You can't tackle. It's yards after contact. It's big plays. It's touchdowns. It's also, Diaco responding to the comment by Riley, or being asked about the comment by Riley, he hadn't read it or heard it.
I didn't hear or read the comment, but having to make tackles in the open field is an appropriate comment for any contest in American football anywhere in the world.
Can I hear that American football in the world? I mean, that's a T-shirt. Having to make tackles, an appropriate comment for American football anywhere in the world. Need a big T-shirt. But it was dot by dot by dot by dot addressed. Okay. How long is the transition going to take? Is this thing a year-long deal? Is it a five-week cram session? Is it something you can measure? And Coach D spoon-fed us with his answer.
Yeah, well, you think about it, you know, for a freshman or a second-year freshman, so it's Tuesday, and somebody said 7. I'm not sure whether it's 8 or 7. It's all running together on me. I think we're in 8, just finished 8. So this would be the first Tuesday they ever experienced like this. So then the next time they experience this same Tuesday will be a year from now. So then that'll be the second time they've ever done it. And if you've done it twice, then it'll only be the third time you've ever done it. So you could see the reps building cumulatively, but if you could see them in a life cycle, this would only be the first or second time they've ever experienced a practice 8 on a Tuesday. You'd have to wait a calendar year to have a chance to do this again, because they don't all feel the same. They feel different.
Thank you. No is the answer. Will the transition take long? It's either a yes or a no or a maybe. That's it. How long was that? A minute? Was thoroughly explained. Thank you. Listen, man, he doesn't have to talk. Appreciate the time. That said, it was thoroughly explained. Yes, no, or maybe is another way you can go. Here is Coach D, cut 6. Some final impressions from that Saturday scrimmage.
Yeah, guys are working hard. Guys are trying hard. There's just a higher understanding of what we're asking them to do. And we've got a long, long, long way to go. A work in progress, and it's going to take time. And like you're pointing out, it'll take game time.
Okay. So the translation is, I'll talk to you in a week. More from Coach Diaco when it comes to defensive depth, when it comes to how young the staff is. He doesn't think so. Pretty good. Next hour, Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, will join us. His thoughts on the latest story he did on college football cheating. He joined Greg Smith and me earlier today. And you'll hear from Mr. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet. We'll even get into Saban a little bit on how many quarterbacks he makes cry a season. His own, not the opposing. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, we'll get caught up with Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. 10 minutes. Rick Pizzo on the way. And more Diaco. More Diaco all the time. I feel like playing music. Although this was a good selection by Danny, musically. Beck is playing at Sturt Cove before the Oregon game. I get weird looks. I publicly say I like Beck's music. And then he's like, you're old. Moving on. Bob Diaco, We've already spent time on Gifford and Newby, the outside linebacker spots. And we started off the show talking about that second level, the linebackers making the black shirt D really something special. And again, it takes all 11, but if any one of the levels are off, it could be tough in a transitional year. Some years, if your secondary is off, maybe you got a great D line to get after the quarterback. Or maybe you have a really good secondary and they can cover dudes longer, so your D line, who may not be awesome, can go after and smack the quarterback. But the linebackers got to be good in coverage, got to be really good against the run, and they need to also be able to bring some pressure. And you're asking one part of that linebacking core to do something they have never, ever done, unless it's a zone blitz. And that's cover. Rarely. But once in a while, you see a defensive end peel off and try and cover a back out of the backfield. That's scary. Okay. So more from Coach Diaco, cut nine here. He was asked about defensive line depth and if it's important. He thought it was funny.
Very important, but it's not unique to Nebraska or unique to our defense. You know, the depth in the defensive line and in the front is a critical piece all over the place. Yeah. Oh, I'm pleased with the guys. They're trying hard. There's physically capable players. They care a whole bunch, and they're a lot of fun to work with. I love coming to work and working with them. They're really a joy.
Okay, so he's happy about that. Good for him. The defensive line is good. So, cut 12 here. How experienced is his staff? You're young. That was the implication with the question. He doesn't think so.
Yeah, I'm not sure how young we are. My hips and knees feel old. So, you know, I think we're energetic. You know, Coach Perella played here, built himself from a walk-on to a scholarship to an all-conference player. Played in the NFL for a dozen years, I think. He's been around the block a few times. I started coaching in 1996. So last time I checked, that was, I think, 21 years ago. So, you know, we've got a lot of experience. Coach Bray played at a high level, coached at a high level. He's the son of a dynamic defensive coach. So we have a lot of experience, and we're very energetic also. We're enjoying the players. We love the players. We're feeding off each other, and that won't stop.
Okay, so they're not inexperienced. Duly noted. Don't think they are either. They haven't worked together, so they're learning this year. Dennis Dodd is about 5 minutes away. Cheating in college football. Some whoppers from an anonymous source or several. And Dennis starts his series on college football cheating with CBS. He caught up with Greg Smith and myself. You'll hear that in about 5 minutes. Rick Pizzo, Buffet Time. Next hour, it's Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. A historian profile on cheating in college football. Myself and Greg Smith caught up with Dennis. What does a 5-star cost you if you're a cheating program?
There's a going rate in a conference that I know of where a 5-star is $80,000.
You know, it's interesting, too. You mentioned the going rate. I remember hearing a story last year about a guy going rate 5-star, $100,000.
Yeah.
And it just happens. And we were talking about this before you came on, kind of setting it up. And my point was, and I want your thoughts on this, Dennis, is it a situation maybe where coaches and teams find themselves kind of in a cycle of doing this to keep up with the Joneses? Because if you're not going to do it, someone else in your conference is going to get that guy, pay for it maybe, and then beat you with him.
It's kind of like, I guess, the PED thing in baseball. I remember reading Game of Shadows with Barry Bonds, and his conclusion was, well, if Mark McGwire's doing it, that's not fair, and I need to do it to show him I'm better than him at that level. So, yeah, I guess if you don't in college football, and in some places, as I pointed out, I don't think Conference USA and the Sun Belt are handing out $100 handshakes. But it's going to be your butt. It's going to be your job. If you're not, I had another coach tell me that he was offered, and it isn't in the story because he's not a sitting coach. He was offered, quote unquote, a quarterback for an amount of money, and the dad wanted to be the quarterback coach, and the coach just laughed and walked away. So I'm not doing that. I mean, at some point you draw the line, except when maybe you're Ole Miss.
Is there an automatic assumption if somebody gets too good, too quick, that it is, for lack of a better term, pony excess, the SMU,
yeah,
the SMU blueprint, or are coaches not as quick to be judgmental if a program rises quickly because maybe they know a coach is good at evaluation and development? What's your feel with that? Is it jealousy and assumption that, yeah, something fishy is going on, or do they give some of their peers the benefit of the doubt?
Well, in the case of Ole Miss, it was just so blatant.
Right.
Too good, too fast. That 2013 recruiting class was ranked in the top 10, top five, I think. And that had never happened before. And for years, you had been hearing, you know, that year and subsequent years, what they had been doing. You know, Ole Miss doesn't draw a five-star receiver like Laquon Treadwell out of Chicago. It just doesn't happen with the Big Ten around there and everything else. They were just sloppy at it. They were bad at it. I had coaches from a long ways away from the SEC telling me stuff about this. And I'm going, really? Oh, yeah, it's really bad. And I think you're seeing it come out. So in the case of, yeah, I mean, I guess SMU is a good comparison because when people start, you know, how that blew up, if you remember SMU, players stopped getting checks. And that made it real easy to talk when you're pissed off. You're promised all this money and you don't get it. Different with Ole Miss, the SEC's been in there for a while since January 16 that we know of. But it is. It too much becomes too much.
Are you surprised that we don't see more guys, like kind of like how the SMU thing happened, that you don't end up seeing more teams go down that way, where they don't want to continue doing it? Like maybe, you know, you have a new coach that comes in and he wants to do things a little bit differently or something to that effect versus the way that, say, Ole Miss had their stuff kind of come down, which is that they were just sloppy. Are you surprised that you don't see it more that way?
Well, Ole Miss was unique. I mean, SMU was unique. I can't think of another scheme where a state's governor had set up a payment plan after the school had gone under probation for paying players and had promised everybody they weren't going to pay players. So that's a unique situation. That probably deserved the death penalty. The Penn State thing was completely off the reservation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the typical enforcement process. So that's not really comparison. Am I surprised more don't do it? I think they do a lot. And, you know, it's below radar, and the NCAA enforcement staff is outgunned. And as long as everybody has a wink and a nod, then, you know, it goes on. Now, the question is, okay, we have this number here, this 10% number, if we're going to accept that. What was it, you know, back in 30 years ago, back in the SMU day? A lot of coaches think it was a lot worse. But some think it's about the same.
You know, when you mentioned that wink and the nod from enforcement and infractions, is part of that, do you think, because there's just too much going on for those guys to be able to handle, as it feels like their kind of offices have been scaled back a little bit and they just don't have the manpower to rein all of this in?
Yeah, now, to be clear, I didn't mean it was a wink and a nod from enforcement. I just meant honor among thieves.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
With the coaches. But, yeah, they don't. They did staff up. After John Duncan came in, I think 2 or 3 years ago, he's the new enforcement director. They laid the smackdown on Louisville. I think they're going to do it with North Carolina. And I think there's a lot there to consider with Ole Miss, too. So this part of this story may be enforcement regaining some of its power and ground. We shall see. They don't have enough people to find out everything. There may be aspects of Ole Miss we don't even know. In this phone call thing, was it a competitive advantage if recruits were involved in this in terms of recruiting? And we don't know that.
Dennis Dodd is with us, national college football writer, at Dennis Dodd CBS on Twitter is where you find him. Dennis, Let's spend a second on just creativity, if we could, and how creative it has gotten to funnel money. What are some examples you heard?
I guess surprise me, I'd heard this for years, but he said it out loud, that schools in the SEC and ACC are funneling money through local churches, but the money either gets to these players or their families or both, and it can't be traced because there's no paper trail because they're nonprofits, these churches. That's, I don't want to say a common way, but it is done. I did a story a couple of years ago just asking people, what are some unique ways where there is no paper trail? ATM cards, you can create one, with a fake name today, probably, and even if it isn't a fake name, give somebody your ATM card. Bitcoin, and I don't pretend to know what Bitcoin is. I guess I know a little bit about it, but if somebody like me doesn't know about it, that's pretty sophisticated, I would think, for the NCAA. There's a story, there's a quote in the story where players, after big wins, routinely walked back to the dorms through the tailgate and made $400 or $500 just fans greasing their palms. And just so the booster could go to the local bar and say, I gave so-and-so $50 and brag about it. But that was common practice.
That is not completely shocking. It's it's one thing to the old $100 handshake a few times over. In the interest of continuing to win and get great players, the boosters sometimes ruin it because they can't keep their mouth shut, Dennis.
The one that got the most attention yesterday, at least in social media, was a coach swears, he told me this, he swears 25 or 30 years ago, a school paid a law student for his law schooling, the tuition, whatever, in exchange for him getting a job or trying to get a job in NCAA enforcement so he could report back from the inside. That actually happened. And this guy swears it's true. I go, come on, you got to be kidding. No, no. He swears it's true. It happened. I'm not saying it's ever happened before or after. But if someone at some school is willing to go to those lengths to find out what's going on, that ought to give you a signal of what's happening maybe someplace in college football.
Is there a legend or story that sticks out? I know Coach Bryant mentioned in your story yesterday on CBSSports.com. Dennis Dodd is with us here. Candid Coaches revealing how many teams cheat and commit major violations. Alabama's been on probation a number of times in their history, but Coach Bryant is mentioned in your story from yesterday, correct?
I believe so. I'm trying to remember the passage where, because I'm mm-hmm. working on the next
sure,
part of
sure.
it. I don't think he's mentioned directly cheating. I'm
right.
trying to remember because it slips my mind right
the,
now.
The quote I have, I want to know everything that goes on.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of how it ended. Yeah, that was an example of just get it done. You know, I don't want to know, just get it done. You know, deliver me the player. In fact, the coaches want plausible deniability because then they can't get penalized directly by the NCAA. You know, if somebody raps on, hey, I know nothing about this. What, you got paid? What are you talking about? I think that's what that speaks to.
You've got buffers in place to yeah. delegate to. Dennis, let's spend a minute or two, if you have it, on college football, the 2017 season, and we're in Nebraska. I wanted your thoughts on Coach Riley, year three in 2017. What's your outlook for Nebraska?
I think Mike Riley is comfortable with Nebraska. I think Nebraska's comfortable with Mike Riley. He's now settled in. Wisconsin's going to be the favorite in the West, probably the prohibitive favorite, but I think there is reason for hope here with Tanner Lee. Now, look, I made sure I looked it up. He's got more interceptions than touchdowns in his career, but he's more of a true quarterback that fits this offense than, you know, where's Tommy Armstrong going, you know, on second down? You know, is he going to run? Is he going to throw? You know, 52% passer. So I think they're more settled in offensively. It will continue to be a division that's up for grabs, not quite like the SEC East, because that really is up for grabs year to year. But if PJ Fleck thought enough of Minnesota to come here with the realistic thought that he could someday really soon win the West, then it's very winnable. But I think Nebraska has obviously made progress under Mike Riley. He's here for the long haul, and I think they just get better.
Hey, and, you know, sticking with Nebraska here, with a lot of talk about that offense, about Mike Riley being an offensive guy, about Tanner Lee, but another, the big hire over the offseason of Bob Diaco coming in and changing over to the 3-4 defense. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think he'll have the continued success that he's had as a defensive coach?
Yeah, he's in a perfect place. He's a ball coach. He's not a head coach. He's in a coordinator. He's not a head coach. I think that was proved at UConn. He likes to be the mad scientist and just be in the room and dial up plays. And the 3-4 is, look, I can't advocate for the 3-4 over the 4-3 or vice versa. But, you know, your particular, taste. It's defensive linemen are hard to come from in general, unless you're in the SEC. So 3-4 might be the way to go. It's basically what Alabama runs, same as the Patriots. So no, I think a definite upgrade. I know it was hard for Mike Riley to get rid of his friend and the former defensive coordinator, but he got a good one. A guy who was and is going to be a coordinator for the rest of his career. So I think Bob Diaco is a good one.
Dennis, a thought on Ole Miss as we close it out here. How difficult a job is Ole Miss going to be moving forward, whether the interim keeps it or they make a change with drop-off? Is it scarred to the point where it'll never kind of get back up to what it was? And we've talked about how they got too good too quick. But can Ole Miss kind of find some sort of gray area where, okay, there's getting some talent down there. They've got a good recruiting base down there. They're in the SEC. They've had success. They've beaten Alabama. That's what's remembered, not how they got the talent to get Alabama. Is it an attractive job for folks trying to get back in either to Division One or first-time coordinators or guys kind of recycled?
Yeah, I can't. I wrote this when I did my candidates. I can't answer that question until somebody tells me what the penalties are going to be.
Right.
You know, you can't make a realistic list of coaching candidates unless you know what shape the program's in, what it looks like, what they can pay. They saved about $15 million when Hugh Freeze walked away without a peep, which kind of shows you how bad it is from his salary and buyout. But that's $15 million. I think a lot of those boosters are going to say, okay, we don't want to screw this up again. Let's make sure we make the right hire. And if it's really bad, do they want, you know, like a Les Miles at age 63 as a bridge coach to the next guy? So there's so many factors here for me to even begin to answer that question. How good a job is that going to be? That really is the question. And nobody knows until we know the penalty.
A question about Texas. How soon does Texas get back under Coach Herman? Do you think it is going to be a short-term or a long-term thing?
No, I think it's short-term. You know, they're not going to win it this year. But Tom Herman, I think, is a superstar. I think the rivalry with Oklahoma just takes on a whole different tack now with two young coaches, Lincoln Riley, the youngest coach in ball now. And Tom Herman will win Big 12 championships if he stays long enough. And I have no reason thinking, you know, where do you go from Texas if you...
You don't.
There's only two or three jobs, maybe. So I think he'll win championships there. He knows how to run the program. I think he's smart enough to keep the meddling outsiders, you know, at arm's length, which has been a problem. And what Mack Brown did perfectly in 15 years, you know, he was the perfect guy. He could coach, he could recruit, he could relate to players, parents, boosters, public speaker, everything. And that's what Tom Herman has to be. I think he's a great ball coach. They need a quarterback. I don't know if he thinks they have one now on the roster, but they will.
Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, at Dennis Dodd, CBS on Twitter. Dennis, thanks for a few minutes. Nice to speak with you again.
All right, thanks, guys.
Dennis laying it out there, fascinating on college football and cheating. Pretty entertaining stuff. We'll take caller 5 right now for Ribfest tickets. Caller 5, Ribfest tickets, 466-3776, 466-3776.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it at Tail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is Big Ten Buffet Time. Mr. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Mr. Rick, how are you?
Schmitty, we're there, man. It is so here with training camp underway and the bus tour on the road. They left last Thursday. The endless summer has kind of come to an end. And truth be told, I'm not too sad about it. I think there are some great storylines coming up this season. It's not going to take very long to get some of the best of them either.
No, and a couple of the storylines that you're interested in from a league standpoint, what's the one you have circled and highlighted, I guess, above all, when you look at the league? What are you interested in seeing in 2017?
Is there as huge a drop-off from the top four teams to the rest of the league as the nation seems to believe there is? There are four teams inside the top 10 preseason: Ohio State, Penn State, Wisconsin, and Michigan. The next highest-ranked team was Northwestern at 35th, followed by Nebraska at 36th. I mean, that is a precipitous drop-off. You're talking about 25 ranking spots. Now, granted, you know how I feel about preseason rankings, but sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. And so the people that allegedly know something about college football are telling you here that outside the Big Four, if you want to call those four teams the Big Four this year, that the Big Ten doesn't have much firepower. I'm not so sure I agree with that, and I'm fascinated to see how that plays itself out.
You look at how good is your air quote weakest team if you're a Power Five league. That's one way I look at it. The other side of it is how amazing is your best team? And you have three, and dare I say four, Big Ten teams that could end up in a playoff. The fourth team I would circle is Wisconsin. Wisconsin's played well but hasn't won against the East. Meanwhile, the East has done pretty well. Of course, you got Bama. Of course, you got SC. And of course, you got Florida State. And then who knows about Clemson. But I think the Big Ten's fine. The gap, though, you're asking about, we're talking about here with Northwestern, with Nebraska, with Michigan State, I don't think it's that far. I think that the mid-tier in the Big Ten's extremely strong.
I agree with that, but I think the problem is you brought up the fact that a lot of conferences are judged either at the top or the bottom. Rarely are they judged by the middle. Rarely is a league judged by how strong the middle of the conference is. And I think that's kind of where the strength in the Big Ten lies. I disagree with you a little in the sense that I don't think that Michigan or Wisconsin will have what it takes this year to be a playoff team.
Okay.
10-win teams, maybe. Solid bowl game, absolutely. But I think when you are going up against those teams that you mentioned, the cream of the crop, you have to be elite. And when I look at experience plus talent versus coaching ability, I see two teams. I see Penn State and Ohio State. And in all likelihood, last year almost showed us that two teams from the same division could get in, but that would be really rare. So I think you basically then become a one-bid playoff league, which I think most leagues, including the Big Ten, would be fine with. The trouble, though, becomes when you look toward the bottom and you have schools like Rutgers struggling, Purdue struggling even with a new head coach we don't know, Illinois really struggling now breaking in a new quarterback. So you have those four at the top and you have three at the bottom, then will any league ever be judged by the middle, by those five teams, the ones that you mentioned, led by Nebraska and Northwestern? I just don't think so. One of those teams is going to have to exceed all expectations for, at year's end, the Big Ten to be considered better than it was at the beginning of the year.
I was looking at some college football news today, and you had a couple of transfer quarterbacks from Alabama kind of open up about how the communication wasn't what they wanted from Saban, from Bama, from the offense, and it was just kind of a mess. Am I wrong to think the Big Ten and some of these elite teams we've talked about, plus you look at Coach Riley and his history, Coach Langsdorf and their history with quarterbacks, is the Big Ten in a better spot than most leagues when it comes to handling quarterbacks?
I think it depends school by school. It absolutely does. It depends on what your coach's background is. I mean, and if you're a quarterback and you have Mike Riley as your head coach, that's a good formula. I mean, here's a guy who knows everything there is to know about quarterbacks. I mean, if you have an offensive mind, if you're a quarterback and you're going to Ohio State and you're running Urban Meyer's offense with Kevin Wilson calling the plays, then yeah, you are in pretty good shape. Now, Paul Christ was a quarterback. But if you're going to Wisconsin as a quarterback, do you feel like you can put up huge numbers? No. Do you feel like you can be in a system where you can win a ton of games? Absolutely. So I think it goes school by school, mm-hmm. and even more specifically, coach by coach. And if you want to boil it down, Chris, it may go coordinator by coordinator. I mean, look at Rutgers, for example. Chris Ash is a defensive-minded head coach, and he just brought in Jerry Kill, who is a run-it-between-the-tackles-down-your-throat guy, as the offensive coordinator. If you're a pro-style quarterback, do you want to land there? You're never going to be throwing the passes you want to the receivers that you want to throw to, so you can't do it conference by conference. I think you have to do it school by school and coach by coach.
Got to be specific. Rick Pizzo's with us, Big Ten Network at BTN, Rick Pizzo, and it's Big Ten Buffet Time with Rick Pizzo. Rick, with this Nebraska defense, Coach Diaco is spending some time today after practice, kind of getting folks caught up, and I think the transition's going well. That has been echoed by some of the other assistants and the players. What are your expectations from this defense? Are you breaking it down? Are you putting benchmarks in, I guess, is the better question, or are you just kind of going to see how it plays out and you'll make your call at the end of the year? What do you think of the D, and what can it be?
You know, most years, Chris, I would say let's wait and evaluate. I don't think this is most years. Mike Riley knows how important this year is. That's why he made the move. Nebraska knows how important Bob Diaco was. That's why they made him the highest paid assistant in school history. To me, there's no wait and see this year. To me, there are benchmarks that have to be made, and it's very simple. You have to be better in points allowed per game. You have to be better in yards allowed per game. You have to be better in takeaways and that turnover ratio. And at the end of the day, you have to put your offense in positions to win football games. And there were too many times last year where it was the other way around. Last couple of years where the offense was trying to bail out the defense. Sometimes they did, sometimes they didn't. Now, that being said, there were times when the defense showed that it has the ability. But you lost some quality players off that team from last year. Some guys who were playmakers in both levels, all three levels. So can they do that this year with the transition? I think they can. Will they do that? I think they better, because I do not think there's any grace period for Bob Diaco's year one like there was for Mike Riley as a head coach in year one.
Culture's been talked about as, you know, we get closer to kickoff, more and more storylines come out. And I wanted to ask you, you're around all of the Big Ten. You've been to Ohio State. You've been to Michigan. You've also been to Nebraska. And Coach Riley feels like his culture and kind of that ownership has been passed from coach to player. It's going to be the player's team versus this is what coach wants us to do, this is what we want to do for the coach, that type of mentality, that mindset. What is so effective culturally at Ohio State? Yes, they win, but how do they build it? Same with Michigan. When you look at the two top teams, and also throw Penn State in there, how is their culture unique, and how does that translate to the success? How do you see it in action at work?
You know, I'm going to be honest with you, Chris, and when I say I don't know, it's not that I'm not trying to answer the question,
sure.
But the fact of the matter is, especially in the case of Michigan, I would say in the case of Ohio State as well, less so in the case of Penn State, because James Franklin is a little bit more open than the other two coaches, you know, Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh, as far as what he will share from a coach to player, sometimes considered private relationship or interaction. But all three of those places do things behind closed doors. I think you would basically say that basically all Power 5 schools now. And the reason why is very understandable, because everything is out there now. You cannot do or say anything, even when you think it's private, without it becoming part of the public consumption process right now. So for me to tell you that I know how the culture is different inside the Ohio State room than it is inside the Michigan room or inside the Penn State room would be disingenuous, because I don't get to go in those rooms. Now, I've been in the locker rooms mainly after wins, and every locker room looks great after a win. I think probably the common thread and the common bond is respect for your head coach. And that seems very simple, but there are some coaches out there that don't get the respect of their players, whether it be for lack of success or by the way they handle themselves, and there is no way that coach is going to be successful. And it's not just a coach, it is a coaching staff, because it filters down. I know the head coach is the face of a program, but these players have much more interaction with their position coaches, with their coordinators on a daily basis than they do their head coach. So they have to have as much respect for that guy as they do for the head guy.
Rick, going to leave you with this. We've been thinking and talking a lot about DeMornay Pearson-L, senior season. He is ready to go, and he's excited to kind of go out and show up for this senior season. Total yards from scrimmage, rushing, receiving, punt return yards for him. What number does he need to hit for Nebraska to be successful?
Oh, including return yards. I mean, if you're going to include return yards, you'd love to see him in triple digits, right, on a game-by-game basis, because he can be so dangerous in the return game. I mean, we were just talking today, and we're doing a segment at some point this week on most exciting players in the Big Ten, and I think he qualifies. He also qualifies because he's returning from an injury, much like Mikey Dudek, much like Janarian Grant, guys who are kind of coming back and trying to become the players that we once saw them as when they were 100%. I just think that he has to affect the game every time he touches the football. And I think you can game plan for him when you're a defensive coordinator, whether they're handing him the ball or throwing the ball. You can game plan that. It's really hard to game plan special teams because you can't plan exactly where the guy is going to kick the ball. You can't plan exactly what kind of blocking scheme the return team is going to have. So I think that is where he can have his biggest impact all year long. And if you put Tanner Lee in the offense in good field position, good things are going to happen.
I was looking at maybe 2,000 yards between rushing, receiving, and total kick return yards, or punt return yards, I should say, for it to translate to a better than average or a successful offensive season. Don't put a bar on him, but I think that's a number that's reachable for him to have the type of senior year he wants.
Yeah, I don't think that's that far out of the question. I mean, if you think about 150 yards per game, if you do that and you times it by, let's say, they go to 13 games, I mean, you're sniffing that number, right, at that point. I mean, you're not there yet, but you're getting awfully close. So, yeah, I mean, if you were to get to 2K, I mean, then you're telling me that Nebraska has good field position, that he scored touchdowns in at least two phases, which is a very important aspect. And I think if that's the number, and he's able to do that, he's a game changer. Then he's the guy who changes everything, even when he doesn't have the football, because he is then affecting the defense. And yes, you get to that number, I would say that equates to at least one additional, if not two additional, wins per year.
Rick, we'll catch up again soon. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Chris.
Thanks, Rick. And caller 4, caller 5, a 6-month subscription for you to HailVarsity.com. Now, caller 4, caller 5, 466-3776, 466-3776, caller 4, caller 5 now.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
Yes, we do, Kramer. Hope you're well. Thanks for your time today. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Do yourself a favor. Log on to HailVarsity.com today and get the hookup with practice recap. Premium content is pretty awesome when it comes to recruiting coverage and some opinion and breakdown, and you can sign up a 30-day free trial offer. Maybe you missed out on being caller 4 or caller 5 a moment ago. It's all right. 30-day free trial offer. Just log on, HailVarsity.com/subscribe. One more thought here when it comes to Nebraska football and practice and defense talked today after practice. Peyton Newell. Remember Peyton Newell? Say it with me, because it's a fun, fun town to talk about. Hiawatha. Huh? Hiawatha, Kansas. South Carolina wanted him. Big-time defensive line recruit. And Peyton's just kind of just been grinding. He's been busting it. And he is a guy that is aware that there may be some gray on that beard in reference to where he's at. Him and Mick, really. So what's he going to do this year? Well, he has moved inside. That's not new news, but he spoke about it today. And again, great coverage with HailVarsity.com. Here is Peyton Newell on that move inside, how it kind of came about. And we'll spend a couple minutes talking about what he can do on the interior. Cut 14, Peyton Newell.
Coach Pro did. Him, Coach Yako, and Coach Riley decided that's where the best fit for me would be. They told me the day before fall camp, so it was a last-minute decision. They obviously knew that's where I would be the best fit. It was more of where they see me as a player contributing, and I'm liking it a lot. It's go time. You know, this is my fourth camp. My body's developed. I'm excited to play. I have a huge opportunity to play, and I'm excited.
Okay, let's do go time. Because, I mean, don't you want to put a bandana around your head, a little eye black on? It's go time, says Peyton Newell. Mailbag is out with HailVarsity.com. Love the mailbag. Answered a couple questions in the mailbag. And some of the questions that were pretty good when it comes to confidence rating. I like that. The better questions come musically, though. That can happen. Alan Parsons, is he still around? Poor Danny. Danny's like, who's Alan Parsons? And Alan Parsons came up in Austin Powers, the movie. And Scott, Dr. Evil's kid that Mini-Me tries to murder repeatedly. I didn't know Alan Parsons helped produce the Beatles. It's pretty cool. But he's the guy who did Tunnel Walk. It's called Cyrus. And Chicago used it long before Nebraska football. The Bulls did. It's okay. Alan's counting his money. If he's still around. And Aaron Wade from the 308 on Twitter, per Hail Varsity, and the mailbag, is Alan Parsons alive and will he be performing live that Wisconsin game for the 97 tribute? That's a tremendous idea. I think one year, Lee Greenwood sang God Bless America, or excuse me, God Bless the USA. My fault. He sang God Bless the USA because really, what else could he sing? Now, he's 68, Alan Parsons is. His band does not exist. He hasn't been around a while. Brandon Vogel says that Cyrus is probably more of a studio song. It would be very hard to perform live. If you're a Nebraska fan, you still might want to see it. Who's going to start at running back? Great question. I thought Ziggy. I'm leaning more Bryant. Just because of lingering injuries. That seems to be a question. Common, popular question at running back. Who's it going to be? Listen, man, you got to be real and ask yourself, do you have a Barry Sanders, all-conference, Ezekiel Elliott back there? No, you've got four guys that do a lot of things really, really well. And a couple of them are special in certain areas. It'll be all of them, period. That's how it's going to have to be. So we will get you a chance at some Salt Dog tickets shortly. You heard from Peyton Newell. You've heard from Coach Diaco today. And I'm interested here on quarterbacks for one more second. And that is Nick Saban, two of his quarterbacks that have transferred. Maybe you saw this story. You've had Josh Rosen today whine about school and ACT and SAT scores and how good would Alabama be if it was harder to get into Alabama. Well, it's not harder to get into Alabama. You just deal with it. The point of athletes going to college is to get that opportunity to get an education. I don't know how many guys or gals come from family backgrounds where they may be the first to graduate college. A four-year deal. And if you go to a two-year deal, I mean, folks come out of those making a ton of money too, or at least into a trade that's really good. But you had two transfer quarterbacks whine about Saban, about Sark, about the miscommunication. Bottom line here is Saban didn't tell a quarterback that, no, you're okay, yeah. The other guy, yeah, he's just going to do some red zone stuff, Jalen Hurts. No, Jalen played the whole game and pretty much spearheaded the blowout of USC. After there was ineffective quarterback play early in the game by the typical A.J. McCarron type quarterbacks. But no one told the guy or the other guy. Both now have transferred. Do we have a quarterback problem in America? Not that there's not talent or that they're not good. It's that they are very quick to tap out in the world of competition. They don't want to wait. And I get that it doesn't appeal to many to wait and grind. But you still have a chance. Oregon State, their quarterback's transferring. Shocker. Oklahoma's lost quarterbacks. Oklahoma State loses quarterbacks. It happens. But from a, to come out and publicly paint Alabama as dysfunctional with how they communicate and treat their quarterbacks, I wouldn't be driving down south anytime soon from Arizona State. We'll wind down a Tuesday on Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time, it's the Tuesday edition of Hail Varsity Radio. Hail Varsity Magazine presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Anybody you know go to Bruno last night. I was unable to pull off tickets for Mama Bear and Junior, which is fine. They can pony up themselves next time. That's what I say. Danny, did you rock out?
You know, unfortunately, I couldn't make the concert, but hopefully I'll get to go the next time he comes around.
So you're sad about this?
Obviously, I'm a little bit sad. It would have been a good way to spend a Monday night, you know, rather than just hanging and watching TV in my room, that's for sure.
Do we need to do a fundraiser?
I think we might have to. Might have to start a GoFundMe page, you know?
See, that is touchy, but I like where your head's at.
Yeah, me and my friends did that, and we actually got an Xbox One for ourselves one time.
Okay, explain this to me. What'd you do?
Well, we pretty much explained we're broke college students, and we need an excuse to procrastinate, so we figured all of our friends and family would have the pity for us, and we ended up raising enough money to get the free Xbox, so it worked.
You've seen a picture of the TV in this studio. You've seen the TV.
Yes, I have.
Can you navigate maybe an upgrade?
I think so.
And I'm not talking like flat screen 80 inch. I'm just talking something that's a smart TV.
Yeah, I think we could get the job done. You know, clearly the track record shows we're pretty good at convincing our family and friends to feel bad for us. So I'm sure I could get it to happen here too.
Do you immediately pile on the guilt, or is it more about the sadness shock factor?
It's a little bit of guilt. It's also a lot of satire, too. You know, we hook them in at first by feeling bad, and then we get them with the jokes, and they just understand, and they're like, all right, these guys are pretty funny. This is something I could donate to.
You could go work in the SEC, it sounds like.
Yeah, apparently I'd fit in perfectly.
Well done by Dennis Dodd. It was great to get his thoughts on his article when it comes to college football cheating. Big thanks to Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, and Mitch Sherman. That is Danny Burke. I'm Chris Schmidt. Back with you tomorrow on Hail Varsity Radio. I want to remind you about drinking and driving. If you plan to go have a couple tonight, be sure to make a plan and get home safe. If not, make a plan anyway, because while your plans can change, here's one thing that won't. If you get caught drinking and driving, you'll face a DWI and it could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and fees, jail time. And of course, you'll be required to install that interlock device for your vehicle. So while you're making plans, make sure you have a sober ride home before you go out. Remember, you drink, you drive, you lose a message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. Salt Dog tickets. We got to give those away, right? A four-pack of VIP seats for when?
They are for Friday, August 11th, and they are playing the Sioux City Explorers.
All right. We don't like Sioux City. A four-pack of Salt Dog tickets are yours Friday night. Great seats. Amazing time with the dogs at Haymarket. Caller 5 right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Caller 5 now, 4 VIP seats for you Friday to Haymarket Park. See the dogs. Great seats, great time. And amazing folks with the Salt Dogs. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4. Thanks to Danny. I'm Chris Schmidt. Back with you tomorrow on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.